From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. In just a moment, Dr. Brian Weiss joins us. Full program, same soul, many bodies, his work in the afterlife, past life regression as well. Just an incredible story out of the Vatican tonight. 400 years after it locked up Galileo for challenging the view that the Earth was the center of the universe, the Vatican has called in experts now to study the possibility of extraterrestrial alien life and its implication for the Catholic Church. Is this part of disclosure? The questions of life's origins and of whether life exists elsewhere in the universe are very suitable and deserve serious consideration, said the Reverend José Gabriel Funes, an astronomer and director of the Vatican Observatory. Funes, a Jesuit priest, presented the results at a five-day conference that gathered astronomers, physicists, biologists, and other experts to discuss the budding field of astrobiology, the study of the origin of life and its existence elsewhere in the cosmos. Funes said the possibility of alien life raises many philosophical and theological implications, but added that the gathering was mainly focused on the scientific perspective and how different disciplines can be used to explore the issue. We'll do a show on this soon. The driver of Boston subway train that came to a screeching halt just before hitting a woman who had fallen onto the tracks has now been hailed as a hero, and Charisse Lewis got a radio call from fellow Massachusetts Bay Transportation Authority employee Jacqueline Osorio, who was standing at the platform at the North Station on Friday night when she saw the woman tumble. Lewis, who saw passengers on the platform frantically waving their arms, immediately tugged the emergency brake. The woman suffered some scrapes and was taken to a hospital for evaluation. She told authorities that she had been drinking. What a miracle there. John Allen Mohammed, the mastermind behind the sniper attacks that left 10 people dead, has been executed. Relatives of the victims watched, reliving the killing spree that terrorized the Washington metro area for 3 weeks back in October of 2002. He looked calm and stoic, but was twitching and blinking as the injections began. Defiant to the end, refusing to utter any final words, victims' families sat behind glass while watching the execution, separated from the rest of the 27 witnesses. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar is being treated for a rare form of leukemia, and the basketball great said his prognosis is encouraging. The NBA's all-time leading scorer was diagnosed last December with this leukemia. The 62-year-old Abdul-Jabbar said his doctors didn't give any guarantees, but informed him that he has a very good chance to live out his life and not have to make any drastic changes to his lifestyle. Is the true rate of unemployment for October 22.1%, not 10.2%, reported by the Bureau of Labor Statistics? Jerome Corsi has been monitoring that. He writes for WorldNet Daily. Jerry, this could be an incredible story. Tell us what you found.
Well, George, I went back and calculated the unemployment rate given the way before the Clinton administration the rate was calculated, and that includes people who have quit looking for jobs. They've become discouraged. They've been looking for a job more than a year, and they've just dropped out of the labor force. Today, those people are not considered unemployed. So when you add in the people who have are coming to the end of their benefits and have actually gone more than a year and dropped out altogether, the true unemployment rate is 22.1%, not 10%. And that's I think,
huge.
A pretty dramatic result.
Absolutely. Are they fudging with the numbers, or is it just a matter of understating the statistics?
Well, it's understating the statistics. I think the Obama administration does not want the American people to realize how dramatic the unemployment situation is. It's even greater if we included independent contractors. I'm sure there's many truckers listening tonight who have just given up looking for jobs. They're private contractors, just like small business people. They're not included in the unemployment statistics. People who are underemployed, who maybe took a part-time job or a lesser wage just simply to get some employment, these people, or fewer hours working at their current job, these people are not considered unemployed, even though their employment situation is less than satisfactory. So 22.1%, I think, including the people who are now discouraged, looking for jobs, looking for more than a year and just giving up, I think 22.1% is an accurate reflection of the current unemployment in the United States.
Jerry, if people want information more on your Red Alert, what do they do?
Red Alert, thank you, George, is a subscription newsletter. It's worldnetdaily.com. There's a bar on the left-hand side, or you can go to redalert.wnd.com. It's less than $100 a year. I write it every week, so about $2 an issue.
All right, thanks, Jerry Corsi. And home values, too. You think unemployment is high. A real estate group says home prices fell to 8 out of every 10 U.S. cities in the third quarter of this year, as heavily discounted distressed sales made up 30% of all deals. And after a slow start, the Obama administration says their mortgage relief program has reached 1 in 5 eligible homeowners. Maybe you're one of the lucky ones because the other 4 out of 5 can't even get callbacks for most of their mortgage companies. As the end of October, more than 650,000 borrowers, or they say 20% of those eligible, have signed up for trials lasting up to 5 months. The modifications reduce monthly payments to more affordable levels. If you've gone through a loan modification process or you're trying to, you know how frustrating that can be, don't you? When you send in your applications, they call you back. They say you need another form. Maybe they don't even call you back. You call them back after a month, and then they say, oh, yeah, we need this form as well. It's truly a mess. A Chinese man has launched a secret sideline by renting himself out as a punching bag for stressed-out women. Now, I'm not kidding. He said he's a punch bag for women, trying to make them feel better. He said, I can make some money and also practice my self-defense skills. He charges $15 for 30 minutes to have women pound away at him. People looking for natural cures will be happy to know that there is one. Two words explain how it works. I believe. It's the placebo effect, the ability of a dummy pill or a fake treatment to make people feel better, just because they expect that it will. It's the mind's ability to alter physical symptoms, such as pain, anxiety, and fatigue. In just the past few weeks, the placebo effect has demonstrated its healing powers. In tests of a new drug to relieve lupus symptoms, about a third of patients felt better when they got dummy pills instead of the drug. I believe. A federal judge has ruled in South Carolina that South Carolina can't issue license plates showing the image of a cross in front of a stained glass window along with the phrase, I believe. The U.S. District Judge ruling said that the license plate was unconstitutional because it violates the First Amendment ban on establishment of religion by government. In a moment, Past Life Therapy with Dr. Brian Weiss on Coast to Coast AM. And here we go for this Coast to Coast ride. I'm George Norrie, and here's one of my faves, Dr. Brian Weiss, a traditional psychotherapist. But Dr. Weiss was astonished. He was skeptical when one of his patients began recalling past life traumas that seemed to hold the key to her recurring nightmares and anxiety attacks. His skepticism was eroded one day, though, when she began to channel messages from the space between lives, which contained remarkable revelations about Dr. Brian Weiss's family and his son who had passed on. Using past life therapy, he was able to cure the patient and embark on a very new, meaningful phase of his own career. Back on Coast to Coast AM, Dr. Brian Weiss. Brian, how are you?
Thank you, George. I'm fine. How are you?
Always a pleasure. And you're keeping busy? You don't stop. You don't stop, do you?
No, I'm traveling all over the world now because the interest in this subject is so high. And it's really been a great opportunity for me to meet wonderful people everywhere, and I don't stop. You're right. I just don't stop.
Why is the interest growing? Because you're right. I feel it, too.
I think there are a lot of reasons. One, shows like yours and others have made it less taboo. People are more open-minded in that sense now because they know more. It's not some secretive thing or some little side mystical area that people don't know about. Movies, radio, television have all brought the concept of past lives and life after death and this kind of spiritual theme out into the open more so. And it's not the province of just one group or one region or one religion or one nation. It's all over the world. So in Asia, in Africa, the U.S., South America, Europe, people are more and more open-minded, and they're having their own experiences. I've been training therapists and others who are doing this work. It's almost like throwing a pebble into the lake and the ripple effect. The more therapists you get, the more results there are, the more patients there are, then more people want to learn it as a therapy. So it's been 30 years since Catherine, the woman that you were just talking about in Many Lives, Many Masters, came into my office, and the whole world is really much more aware of these concepts now. Of course, in India and in those areas, the concepts were always there, but using it as a therapy to help people to heal, to get rid of physical and emotional illnesses, that's kind of the new thing, and that's what I've been teaching all over the place.
Brian, for our new listeners, briefly tell us about Catherine and that entire episode.
Well, I was classically trained as a psychiatrist at Columbia University and Yale Medical School. I didn't believe in past lives or psychic phenomena or any of that kind of stuff. Very much of an academic. And I was writing scientific papers and book chapters. When a young woman, Catherine, at that time in her late 20s, came into my office, for a year and a half we did conventional psychotherapy. She was suffering from phobias and panic attacks and depression and severe insomnia as well. We weren't making much progress, so I used hypnosis, which is merely a form of focusing the concentration. We all do it every day, and it's not mysterious or what you see in the movies or on television. It's just focusing the concentration. But in that state, the memory is enhanced. And I used it to try to find out memories from her childhood that she was forgetting that might be the clue to symptoms she was having in her present life, in the present time. And she did remember some childhood traumas that were pretty severe, but her symptoms remained. And so about the second week that we were trying the hypnosis, she came in and I told her to go back to the time when her symptoms first began while she was in this deep hypnotic state. I thought she would go back to the age of 3 or 4, but instead she went back nearly 4,000 years into an ancient Near Eastern existence. I didn't believe that it was really memory. I thought it must be fantasy or metaphor or like a dream, but I think it's real memory because it was so detailed and so emotional. And she had a lifelong fear of gagging or choking, one reason she couldn't take medicines, which in my earlier days I would be using for someone with her symptoms. And she refused because she had this fear of choking or gagging. She couldn't take any medicines. But when she remembered drowning in that ancient lifetime, the symptom disappeared, and it never came back. And that was the beginning for me, because I knew that fantasies or metaphors, these things don't cure illnesses, symptoms, severe mental problems. And yet her memories did. Her symptoms disappeared. Week by week, as we continued the work, all of her symptoms disappeared, the sleep disorder, the depression, the anxiety. And that was without using any medicines in her case.
Isn't that amazing how that works?
It really is. And I've seen this, you know, so often, time after time, sometimes very, very quickly. I think we were discussing it last year in August when I was on your show the last time, because I'd been on the Oprah show a couple of months before that. And then they were just airing them around the time I came on Coast to Coast AM. And on that show, I had worked with 8 people who had severe phobias, and they were all cured in the first session, which is very rare. All 8, though. And then one show became 2 because they didn't want to cut any of the tape.
Yeah.
And that sort of, that, like your show, that gets it out to a lot of people who might be on the fence or who have their own private experiences maybe, but they're afraid to tell other people because they don't want to be considered weird or strange or crazy. And now they're finding out, wait a minute, it's not so weird. This doctor's finding it. Other people are finding it. I saw this here. I heard it on Coast to Coast. It's really not weird. I'm not strange. And that's how the word gets out there and it spreads.
Are there new souls forming all the time? Or would you say that nearly everyone has gone through many past lives?
I think, and this is all just from my own work and my own research, that all souls are probably ageless, that they're really not forming. But they may be new here on the earth, because this seems to not be the only place.
Okay.
And my patients talk about this all the time, that there are so many other places, dimensions, physical or non-physical dimensions, where souls exist. This is just one small little school, one small little physical planet in this huge multitude of possible places. So I think that there are new souls to the earth. Yes, they come here from other places. And some have been here many times, reincarnating in order to learn their lessons or for whatever reasons or to help other souls out. But all souls are probably ageless. They're just coming from other places to this earth.
Now, tell me, in your opinion, Brian, what is a soul? And when it was created, now I'm assuming it was created and that it wasn't always here, but in here being in the universe, of course, if it was created, speculate on how that happened. But what is a soul?
Well, to me, a soul is that part of us which survives the death of the physical body. You can call it consciousness, awareness. It's probably going to be defined in the future as some sort of energy, because energy never ceases, as we know. And this energy has memory, it has wisdom, it has knowledge. So when it leaves the body at physical death, it goes on. And if it needs to come back in another physical body, it does, because its learning may not be complete. That, to me, is the soul. It's that part of our consciousness that doesn't die when the body dies. Now, the concept of agelessness or immortality or eternity is very difficult for us to get our minds around, because it runs counterintuitive to us. How can something be timeless? But if there is no time, and maybe there isn't time on the other side, then the concept of ageless really might be true. And then there might not be an origin to souls. If there is an origin to souls, it has to come from some sort of prime creator of all of these things. And that's what people usually think of as God. So if that wisdom that probably God is, by the way, indescribable, the qualities going way beyond what the human mind can even possibly comprehend, that would be the origins of souls. But the other possibility is that souls are sort of sparks of God that are sent out through all of the universes in order to, whatever the purpose is, accumulate wisdom and then return back to their source.
How?
This is the basis of all the religions, I think.
How can someone determine whether they had a past life? Do you have to go to a therapist, or can you do it yourself?
You can do it yourself. I know we've been talking about this for years, and way back, I remember once Art Bell was shocked when he found that I had put out these CDs that have regression on them, that you can listen to the CDs and have your own past life regression memory, because they're very safe. And so you don't have to go to a therapist to have a past life regression. You can, of course. And there are people like me who do it. But you can listen to a CD, or it can be in a dream, like a dream fragment. Mm-hmm. You dream of yourself in an ancient time and place. It may not be a Freudian metaphor. Maybe it's an actual memory, and sometimes it is. A lot of people have had deja vus, these feelings of familiarity,
right,
as if they've been in a place before or met a person before. And it turns out when we do the regression that they indeed have, or they may be in a place like Berlin or Prague or Paris, and having never been there before, they know their way around and where the old church used to be, except it burned down in the 1800s, and they know where the secret room was in that church, things like that. So also many people who do body work, like massage therapists and chiropractic physicians and others, body workers, energy workers, they tell me that a small percentage of their clients, 3 to 5%, have spontaneous past life memories when they're working on a particular part of their body, say the ankle, and that may elicit a memory. So, and children have often talked about when they were big, and it's not always imagination, because you can sometimes track down their stories and find out that they're telling truth. So there are many non-hypnotic ways of having these past life memories.
How do you go within? How do you go deep within yourself?
It's a practice thing. Some people practice through meditation, which for many of us is difficult, but it really just means focusing the mind. And I think that, and I work a lot with professional athletes, teaching them hypnosis, and others, actors, actresses, who need to learn how to focus. If you turn that focus inward, and you just become aware that you're thinking or what you're thinking, instead of it being just an automatic process. You start to go deeper, and then you relax all of your muscles, and you go deeper and deeper. It's not that difficult to do. Most of us can do this sort of inward work.
More to come with Dr. Brian Weiss in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, all around the country, our book, Journey to the Light with Bill Burns, is out now in bookstores. It's on Amazon.com. These are amazing firsthand accounts of how coast-to-coast listeners changed their lives, transcended their doubts and fears, and unlocked their secrets to their own spiritual growth. They're just incredible stories, and it's out there now in the bookstores and on Amazon.com. Journey to the Light. Very proud of the contribution by coast-to-coast listeners. Back in a moment with Dr. Brian Weiss as we talk about past life therapy on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Dr. Brian Weiss, our special guest tonight. Brian, is there a portion of the brain that also works on this past life regression?
There may be. Nobody knows exactly what it is, but I know Wilder Penfield, a Canadian scientist,
yes,
years ago, was studying the right temporal lobe. And when stimulating that part of the brain, he was able to elicit past life memories. So there might be that part of the brain involved with this. Certainly when you do EEG studies and things like that, you see lots of things lighting up because you're using your visual cortex, your other parts of the brain as well. But it looks like it's that right temporal lobe that may be the part of the brain involved with this.
How quickly does it take someone to get in a meditative state, either through hypnosis or self-regression?
The more you do it, the more quickly it happens. It's a kind of cumulative process, so that when I'm first starting out with a person, it may take a little bit longer, but after a couple of sessions, they're there within minutes because they now know how to do it. So it's like a practice thing, and you get better and better at it. A lot of the people I was mentioning before a little bit, professional athletes and actors and actresses, they're practicing all the time. Say you're an actor, you're learning your lines, you're then doing your lines, so you're putting yourself into this concentrated state. Anybody who can concentrate very well can do this quickly. It's sort of a myth that a strong mind will resist it. It's the opposite. The stronger your mind is, the more you can focus and concentrate, the easier and faster you'll go into this deeper state.
Brian, you go to conferences all the time. You've got one coming up. We'll talk about that later on tonight, but you know, I just came back from Chicago, where I emceed the Radio Hall of Fame for a number of tremendous broadcasters who were inducted into the Hall of Fame. And also I'm going up to Albuquerque this weekend for an event. And I sort of self-hypnotize myself before I go on stage. I don't get nervous in front of a crowd. I've been doing that since I was a kid. But I do try to get into a different zone when I get out there. Is that what you're talking about?
Yes, that's exactly what it is. That's the focusing of the mind. And some people just slip into it naturally or more easily. I know I've worked with some concert pianists and people in symphony orchestras who do their best work when they're sort of floating outside of their body, watching themselves from outside. They go that deep, and they're sort of playing that automatically, so their mind, their left brain, doesn't get in the way. But you are, George, putting yourself into this hypnotic state, that state of concentration and focus. And you just do it naturally. You've been doing it for so long that it comes easily to you.
When you hypnotize people, how long does it take to get them in that state?
I use different techniques. When I teach, and twice a year I teach professionals how to do regression therapy, and the first day or two we're just teaching hypnosis. I use a rapid technique that takes about 30 seconds. And the most common one, though, is called progressive relaxation. It's when I talk to you and I'm saying relax your muscles and focus on your breathing, and you're going deeper and deeper and imagine a beautiful garden and so on. And that may take 10 or 15 minutes. But the more the person does it, the quicker and quicker they can go into it. So soon I'm just, you know, they hit the chair in my office and I say, take a few deep breaths. I'm going to count down from 10 to 1. And they're already in the state. It can be very, very quickly.
Are there people who can't be hypnotized?
Yes, there are some, about 15% of people who cannot be hypnotized. And there are people who can't focus. If you can concentrate, you can be hypnotized. So people with dementia or Alzheimer's or who are psychotic or intoxicated, they can't be hypnotized because they can't concentrate, they can't focus. But almost anybody else can be hypnotized.
Take us through, well, don't hypnotize us though, Brian.
No.
But how do you hypnotize people? I mean, do you have to have, you know, a little watch that goes back and forth or anything like that? Or do you just do it with your voice, as you said, in a CD form too? I guess you don't need to see something with your eyes, right?
No, I can show you in 1 minute. And you know, if obviously if you're driving a truck listening, don't do this. But here's how it, right, I don't think
no, that,
they should
that
do
would
this.
Be a problem.
Right, that could be.
I bet, though, that you could, without harming anybody's driving technique, get them to forget how they got from point A to point B.
Yes, I can do that. And let me show you the hypnosis thing. It's so quick, and it's a regression, too. I can do this in 1 minute. So if you're driving, don't close your eyes. But if you're not driving and it's safe to close your eyes, if you're listening.
And if I do it, Brian, and you don't hear me for a while, scream at me or something.
I'm not
right?
going to put you to sleep. That's a myth. It's just a visualization. So if you close your eyes and you just take a few deep breaths and relax all of your muscles, and now you're just relaxing your muscles, your face, your jaw, your neck, your shoulders, breathing so peacefully. And just imagine that you're breathing out stress and breathing out tension and breathing in beautiful energy. And now visualize or imagine a beautiful piece of lemon in front of you, a beautiful juicy lemon. And now, as you stay in this deeply relaxed state, imagine that you're biting into the lemon. And taste it, smell it, use all of your senses. You're biting into a lemon. And now just experience that for a few moments, breathing so relaxed, staying very, very peaceful, your muscles relaxing, you're biting into a lemon, you're tasting the lemon, you can smell it. And now just let the lemon fade away, let the taste of the lemon, the image of the lemon fade away and disappear. And if your eyes had been closed, you can open them. And if you're a truck driver, you're already with open eyes. And that's hypnosis. That's all it is, George. That, and I bet 50% of your listeners were able just now to taste a lemon or to have some sensation.
You know, it was funny when you did that. And first of all, why the lemon? Why'd you pick the lemon?
I picked the lemon because it's neutral. You know, it's not scary to anyone. It's,
okay.
And a lot of people know the lemon taste. And if you tasted a lemon, and a lot of people did, and if I could see their faces, I'm sure we'd be seeing people making that lemon
winces.
Face.
Yeah, my eyes winced when I did that.
Exactly. And that's regression because you went back in time to when you had tasted a lemon. You didn't do it right now. Nobody came into the studio and put a lemon in your mouth, and that's hypnosis and regression right there. And you can see how safe it is, too. You could have opened your eyes at any time. You could have changed the lemon to a chocolate bar or something if you wanted to.
Orange, anything.
Orange,
right?
Sure.
All right, when you do that, though, what then do you do to either try to find your past life or to try to get yourself into a state of, you know what I believe? Extreme consciousness, where you're able to do things,
right? Extreme
transmit
focus.
Thoughts to people and things like that.
Exactly.
How do you take it? How do you take it for the next step?
Well, if I were using a lemon as an induction, and you were already relaxing your muscles and you were tasting the lemon, then I said, now let the lemon fade away. But instead of having you open your eyes, I would have said, now we're going to go deeper. And we're going to go into an even more deeply relaxed state. And I would have maybe counted down because people go deeper as the numbers go down. And then I would have said something like, imagine a beautiful door now in front of you. And this is a doorway into your past lives or into other dimensions or spiritual states, a doorway through which there's something for you to learn that can teach you, a doorway to your past lives, and that there's a beautiful light on the other side of the door. And as I count backwards from 5 to 1, the door will open. You'll go through it, through the light, and there will be a scene, a person, an experience on the other side of this door, on the other side of the light. Join it completely as I reach the number 1. Now, I'm sure there's a percentage of your audience right now who could go through the door and would join a scene and would have a past life regression. If I kept talking about that, and if I took you through the door and to the scene, to the figure, because the first thing that I would say as I reach the number one is, now look down at your feet and observe what kind of footwear you have on, whether shoes or boots or furs or animal skins or sandals or perhaps something different or maybe nothing at all. And then look at your clothes and your hands, the same or different, and looking around. And that's the process. Now, I'm summarizing because I didn't want to do a regression.
I understand.
I'm always, always, always cautious with truck drivers and anyone else operating machinery in the middle of the night. But if
all our security guards and law enforcement around the country, they've all fallen asleep.
We could do that.
We don't want to do that.
But that's how it works. And then the scene would be there. You know, you're looking down at your feet, and you're seeing what this is. And people are surprised sometimes. Oh, they see they're a woman, and they see men's feet, or they see sandals, or they see military boots from the 19th century, whatever it is. And we just go from there, because then I'll go, now look around, and what do you observe, and the geography, the topography, architecture, buildings, are there other people, how are they dressed, what do they look like? And that in a nutshell is the kind of process. But I'm doing it more slowly when I do it in the office. And the people, you don't have to be in a deep state, just focusing that concentration. And you would start to have experiences.
And now, are the experiences always frightening experiences or good experiences? For example, let's say that, you know, one lived during the Roman era of Caesar,
mm-hmm.
and he might have been a Roman centurion, and he got killed by a sword. Would he generally maybe see himself in that kind of garb with the uniform and you know, the shield, and will he feel tension? Or will he feel good?
Well, all of those things, because it depends. If the person's comfortable with it, they can have feelings, emotions from that time. But if they're at all anxious, even a little bit, I just have them floating above and watching from a distance, like watching a movie. And then we go closer and closer. But if you do it gradually, there's no fear. There's no pain. There doesn't have to be. I just had a man who had something like that. Wasn't from Roman times, but it was more medieval, and someone had stolen his children from a rival castle, really, but different region. And he, in his haste, improvised this quick army. Mostly they were farmers, though, and he went to rescue his children, but he was killed at the moat. Someone had plunged a sword into his neck, angling downwards, because he was down in the moat. This came from the bridge. And in that lifetime, he had pneumothorax. He was describing the symptoms of that. And as a physician, I recognized what that was, a difficulty breathing. But I just had him floating above. He wasn't in discomfort. And it turns out in this life, he's had several spontaneous pneumothoraxes. That is when air gets into the lungs and you can't breathe. And since that time, he hasn't had any. It's been so much better for him. A weight was lifted from his shoulder. So in the long run, it's pleasant because you remove the blocks and obstacles, the symptoms that may be plaguing you now that perhaps you were carrying over from that time. So if it's a Roman time and, say, someone stabbed you in the back and you have back pain, and now you remember that, your back pain will generally disappear, and you can get on with your life in a more complete and happier way.
So in most cases, your problems or your illnesses may be helped by past life therapy.
Absolutely. That's how it really works. And it's very, very effective, and it's very safe. I'm not saying everybody has to go through this. Many of us don't have symptoms. But I find that if you do have symptoms and phobias and pain and psychosomatic disorders, these are really amenable to this type of therapy. They can go pretty quickly sometimes. You know, you have neck pain, and you find out you were hanged in a past life. Or what's come up a lot, someone has been strangled or hanged and can't wear anything tight around their neck in this life. They can't button the top button of their shirt, all their turtlenecks if they have any are stretched completely out of place. Nobody can really touch their neck. They get very uncomfortable. And then when they remember the hanging or the strangling or whatever it was, and it's not painful to remember because you can watch it from a distance, then that symptom will disappear. That's how it works. So it's very effective in healing these kinds of symptoms.
Brian, with remote viewing, sometimes when you try to determine where are you date-wise, you need to see something. You need to see a calendar, maybe a newspaper with a date on it, maybe a license plate on a car that has a date on it as well. Is that the same with past life regression, where if they go back in the time, like you talked about Catherine, remembering that she was in the BC period, you know, before the BC period was even a concept?
Yeah.
People then didn't know what was BC. But is that the same? Do they have to see something, or how do they know? How do they know when they are back?
It depends how deep they are, because it's memory. So like we did with the lemon, you know, if I asked you at that time, where is this taking place? When is it? Same type of memory. Catherine could go back and remember BC because she was speaking English. She knew that it was a memory, a year flashed in her mind. But sometimes if a person is deep, they need to find a newspaper or something like that to check out the date. It's not actually time travel in that sense. It's memory. And so it's a little bit different from remote viewing in that regard. So sometimes I'll say, well, let a date appear in your mind, and it will. But sometimes if nothing happens, I say, I'll try to have them find a newspaper or something, if it was recent enough, that will give me a date so that I can place it for them. And sometimes they'll describe a battle, and we'll find out which battle it was, and they'll describe the uniforms, and we're able to validate the past life memory in that regard. But it's a memory. It's not actually going there like in remote viewing.
Right. How many people do you think you've helped with past life regression?
You know, I was thinking about that the other day. Probably millions.
Oh, my God.
I've done 4,000 in my office, but when we do shows, when I do large events like the one in Phoenix that you're going to talk about or Tampa, then I'm seeing 1,000 more, 2,000 more, and I've been going around the country for the past 25 years doing these things, so probably millions.
That's a great time to talk about Phoenix. When is this event?
It's this weekend.
It's coming up.
Yeah, I'll be Friday doing a one-day intensive there. People just need to go on to my website. They can find the information. I'll be doing two shorter sessions too, but the Friday one will be an all-day event, and I'll do group regressions. I'll take the whole group back, just like we started to do a little bit on the air with the lemon and beyond that and through the door and having the scene focus. Well, I won't stop it when we're in the group, when we're in Phoenix. We'll just be going even deeper. And about two-thirds of the people will have a past life memory just from those group experiences.
Brian, do they get emotional sometimes? Break down, cry, everything like that?
More in my office because I let it go deeper. In the group, not so much because I have them just float above it or come out of it a little bit or imagine themselves watching it from a distance like a movie or going back to a pleasant place like a garden or a safe place for them if they become uncomfortable at all. So in the group, I'm more careful that way. But if I'm working one-on-one with the patient in my office, then I do let them become emotional because sometimes that really is a rapid cure when the emotions are there. Therapists call this catharsis or abreaction. And it's very effective.
Yeah, sometimes then it's good. It's good to get that
emotion.
Yeah, very
good. It's good for a therapist when emotion is present.
That is something. In the youngest person that you have past life regressed, how old?
Well, I've worked with teenagers, but there are people working with children. And I've done children, but not clinically, not in my office. But people work with children because children have past life memories, too.
Sure. How about the little boy in Chicago who everyone now thinks was a World War II pilot?
Yeah, the airplane.
Wonderful
validation story, that one. Yeah, and you know that's been confirmed. And there are many other cases of children like that. That's not imagination. You know, that child could not know that much about airplanes at such a young age.
Brian, when we come back, I want to talk about going into the future with past lives. Dr. Bruce Goldberg believes you can do that. I want to get your take on that as well. As a matter of fact, he says, I am Dexter Monterey from the future, a talk show host on some global network, way, way out into the future. And then we'll also talk about reincarnation. Why does it happen? Why is it necessary? More to come with Dr. Brian Weiss, and then our last hour with him, we'll take phone calls from you, but not next. Not next.